Good afternoon. I am Patricia Sheehan, rather than Dolores Pesha, from Washington University, and the chair of this session. This last session of the day will discuss Lutheran liturgical music, hymnody of the Reformation period. The handouts have been passed around, but for any of you coming in late, you may find them at the back of the room. We'll begin then with the presentation by Sister Bertha Fox, who did her doctoral work at the University of Illinois. She has special interest in the history of liturgy, liturgical music, and 16th century music manuscript studies. She teaches now music history at Clark College in Dubuque, Iowa. Her areas of interest include Gregorian chant, liturgy, 15th and 16th century polyphony, and computer applications of musicology. And she will speak on the Wittenberg connections and the Barth Reformation.
You will really need this handout, so I hope you all have it. I'm grateful for this opportunity to share with you a few observations about a mid-16th century print manuscript, Bartha Print 6. This collection of polyphonic sacred music contains 80 printed responsories and about 100 hand-copied compositions. Hence, it is called a print manuscript. Since there is one book of music for each voice, discantus for soprano, altus, tenor, and basses, and each book has music for only that part, the part book, the print manuscript is actually composed of four part books. By examining this print manuscript that was probably used in the Church of St. Aegidius in Bartha during its early Reformed years, we can see several things that linked this seemingly isolated city in Slovakia with the University and Reformation Center in Wittenberg. This afternoon I will talk about Bartha, its geography and form, about Print 6, the German Lutheran aspects, the repertory and liturgical aspects, and then about Leonard and Peter Shetland. The maps on page 1 of your handout locate Bartha in the northeastern corner of present-day Czechoslovakia in the foothills of the Carpathian Mountains, close to the Polish and Russian borders. St. Aegidius Church, now over 6 centuries old, still towers over Bartha's medieval town square and the renowned Latin school next to the church, witnessing to the glory that once was Bartha's. The mountains shown on the map suggest that access to Krakow, Breslau, Leipzig, and Wittenberg was easier than access to Budapest, Bratislava, and Vienna. Indeed, studies show that more cultural, educational, and commercial exchanges took place between Bartha and these foreign countries than between Bartha and those to which this upper Hungarian town owed fealty. It was quite natural, therefore, that the Reform movement came the same easy access way. Most of the significant reforms in Slovakia took place after 1550, reaching their zenith at the beginning of the 1600s. Bartha religious leaders played crucial roles in effecting those reforms. Conservatism and moderation characterized the movement, helping reform ideas spread quickly and be accepted widely. And David Daniels, passing handouts around, is the one who really knows about the Reformation in Slovakia. In 1549, Leonard Steckel, rector of the Bartha Latin School, was instrumental in drawing up the first confession for Bartha and four neighboring cities. This confession, an adaptation of the Augsburg Confession, was expressed in the moderate language typical of Melanchthon, Steckel's friend and teacher. It served as a model for two other confessions by other groups of Slovak cities. Not until 1614 did the Lutherans of Eastern Slovakia formally separate from the Church of Rome. The early Lutheran reformers had problems providing music for the various reform liturgies. Although many books of music were printed, no single book could meet all needs. Local churches designed their own music collections to fit their particular requirements by copying the music from a variety of printed books. Coordinate 6, which we shall examine, is a mid-16th century example of such an effort. Its description on page 2 of your handout summarizes the basic facts about this set of part books. Its physical description, its contents, and composers. Apparently, this print and manuscript combination was a huge success because it was obviously used. It wasn't just looked at. The page corners are dog-eared and stained and much holy, and in some places the paper has been worn away. Scribblings and reminders for scenes appear in the margins, and there are attempts at drawing staves and notes that makes one think that these books were used in a school situation. Bartha Print 6 is just one set of part books from the so-called Bartha collection, now preserved in the Hungarian National Library in Budapest. This collection of 49 sets of prints and manuscripts between the 16th and 17th century music was purchased from the Church of St. Aegidius in Bartha by the Hungarian government in 1918, just before the outbreak of the First World War. At that time, Bartha was still under the jurisdiction of Hungary as it had been for centuries. Shortly after the war, it became part of the new nation of Czechoslovakia. Although the town is now called Bardiov, the collection retains the Hungarian name of Bartha, which I will use for this discussion. Evidence within Bartha Print 6 shows that it was compiled for use by a German Lutheran congregation in Bartha. The German aspect is immediately evident if you glance at page 3 of your handout, the inventory, the list of titles. But there are more compositions that use German. You will look at the right-hand side, the column that has a single letter C, L for language. That indicates all of the pieces that use German. Those with G use just German. Those with M use a mixture of German and Latin. Those with A are strophic pieces that alternate use of German and Latin. And those with S are special pieces. The inclusion of traditional German religious songs, such as items 20 and 21, 73 and 79, also show German heritage, predating the Reform movement. A special German characteristic appears in the hymn cycle that makes up the most organized section of the manuscript edition, items 23 to 65 on the inventory. I'll discuss that cycle in more detail later. Here I will simply note that although most of the music settings for those hymns were copied from the Rau 1542 hymn publication or from one of the Walter books, many of the hymn texts have been changed. In his study of 15th century and early 16th century hymns, Tom Ward observes that the German polyphonic hymn tradition was more likely to accept new texts than other hymn traditions. Ward, who has also studied the polyphonic settings of 15th century East processions, notes that these settings are usually found in manuscripts of German or Bohemian origin. In Bartha Print 6, a group of 5 processional pieces for Palm Sunday and Easter is found, items 79 to 83. Another German tradition. That this manuscript is German seems obvious, perhaps. How then could it possibly have come from Bartha in Slovakia, which had been under Hungarian rule for hundreds of years by the 16th century? Originally, Bartha wasn't German. Tradition says that a church in honor of St. Aegidius had been erected on the site of Bartha in the 10th century. Another tradition says that Bartha was a Slavic settlement that sprang up at an intersection of the Royal Highway, the ancient trade route that connected the Black Sea with the Baltic Sea. Bartha, too, was destroyed by the Tartars when they devastated Hungary in 1242. So many people died during this invasion that Balaam IV, ruler of Hungary, brought in settlers from German lands to rebuild the ruined Hungarian towns by granting those German settlers some special privileges. From that time on, Bartha was a predominantly German settlement. And continuing with our quick survey of the contents of Print 6, we can also see that the manuscript is Lutheran. For example, the abbreviated cycles for the Mass Ordinary, items 16 to 19, 75 and 76 contain only the Kyrie and the Gloria. Although items 16 to 19 don't look abbreviated, they are. Only the Kyrie and Gloria are complete. The proper cycles are also abbreviated, including only an intro, Alleluia verse, and prosa as in items 74 to 78 and 88 to 90 for the feasts of the Ascension and Resurrection. Another example of Lutheran influence appears in item 47, a hymn for the feast of Michael the Archangel. This hymn text, written by Melanchthon, does not appear in the print for which the music was copied. The Barker Print 6 compiler chose to use the newer text by one of the Reformed leaders instead of the traditional text that had been printed. Other examples of Lutheran texts are found in item 85, which includes the strokes written by Luther, and item 15, the German today traditionally ascribed to Luther. There's further indication of Luther in the composer column. Although composers did not follow strict confessional lines, nevertheless, the inclusion of several compositions by Walter was not usual in Roman Catholic manuscripts for this period. Neither was it usual for Catholics to copy much music from the prints published in Wittenberg. For example, look at another inventory catalog, the one toward the right labeled C-O-N-C-D, for concordance, and look at the third of these columns. This column contains abbreviations for seven music publications. It shows that nearly two-thirds of the compositions in Barker Print 6 were copied from seven prints, two published at Nuremberg and five in Wittenberg between the years 1538 and 1551. This is not surprising when one considers that many Barker men were educated in Wittenberg, where they must have come in contact with this music. Other examples could be given, but these are sufficient to show the Lutheran fit of Barker Print 6 and therefore general Wittenberg connections. Several aspects of the liturgical and repertorial organization of this print manuscript merit examination. Time permits mention of only two, the printed responsories and the manuscript hymns. Resonarius composed 80 responsories published in Wittenberg in 1544. These responsories are bound with the manuscript music already mentioned into one part book for each of the four voices in Barker Print 6. Although it is impossible to ascertain which printed responsories were actually sung by the choir that used the books, changes and additions made to a number of them suggest that they were performed and should therefore be especially considered when discussing music for the liturgy of Barker. Directions for performance of the composition seem to be a fairly clear indication of use. 9 of the 8 responsories contain such directions. Substantial change in printed text is another sign that the composition may have been performed. In 5 responsories, that occurs. The text and music for 6 hymns, the first 6 items on the inventory in the handout with a P after the item numbers, are written in the margins of 10 different responsories. When a hymn appropriate for a certain feast is copied in the margins of a printed responsory designated for the same feast, there's a strong possibility that both hymn and responsory are similar. So a total of 22 responsories have changes or additions that indicate a possible performance. Most of the extensive manuscript hymn section, items 23 to 65 of the inventory, was copied by a single scribe who carefully arranged the hymns in liturgical order. The copyist so freely adapted the printed settings to fit local liturgical needs that no one else comes near close to what he did with changing those hymn texts. On page 4 of your handout, you have an illustration of the way in which the scribe adapted the printed, published music of the 1542 published version and his version, substituting text and changing feast designation. These hymns would ordinarily be used at Vespers. Some of them might also have been used at the Mass as specified in many church orders from this period. because the Bartha directives have not been examined, no definite statement can be made about the use of cannabis outside business. Although we cannot determine which feasts were celebrated in Bartha after St. Egidius' church had been reformed, the hymn cycle helps us reconstruct the calendar. Now we need to look at that inventory and page 5 of your handout, the liturgical occasions. Inventory first. At first glance, the cycle in Bartha Print 6 does not appear to be in liturgical order. The first and last hymns of the cycle, items 23 to 65, seem to have been planned as a pair. The cycle begins with the common hymn for the first vespers of Sunday and closes with the hymn for second vespers. Item 24, designated for the feast of Peter and Paul and other apostles, is listed in brackets on page 5 of your handout. It's listed for each feast of the apostles on which it could be used. When this is done, the liturgical logic is described as apparent. The hymn is assigned to the feast of Peter and Paul on June 29th, but it appears before the Advent hymn, item 30, and therefore must be for the feast of St. Andrew, Apostle, on November 30th, the first feast of the liturgical year. The designation of this hymn for Peter and Paul rather than Andrew shows the primacy of these two apostles. The insertion of a hymn in honor of Michael the Archangel, item 47, between the resurrection and the ascension seems out of order, for the feast was traditionally kept on September 29th, even in the Lutheran Church. The hymn is without liturgical designation in our liturgical order. Since the other hymns in the main hymn section are in strict liturgical order, it would have been out of character for the scribe to include the Michael hymn at this point, unless it belongs. Examination of the pre-Reformation calendars from a Bartha Missal and a Gregory reveals that the feast could have been that of May 8th, the apparition of St. Michael, a major feast in the Missal calendar. This feast is also listed in late 15th and early 16th century missals from other Hungarian dioceses. There must have been a tradition of devotion to Michael in Bartha, for the monastery church in Bartha, taken over by the Lutherans, was renamed in honor of Michael. Since May 8th usually occurs before the movable feast of the Ascension, the hymn placement is done with care, just as it is for the hymns for the purification and the conception of Christ. The celebration of the purification, conception of Christ, visitation, and apostles' feasts was common. Not every church commemorated the feast of the beheading of John the Baptist on August 29th, as well as his birth on June 24th. Nor did all observe the Transfiguration on August 6th and the Feast of All Saints on November 1. All of these feasts are specified in the Bartha Print 6 hymn cycle. At this point, no other cycle has been found in other Lutheran churches like this one. The inclusion of these feasts in the Bartha Print manuscript witnesses to the strength of the local tradition and the respect paid that tradition by the Lutheran reformers. Now, amidst liturgical occasions, I neglected to put the plus beside the item numbers, means that there is a responsory that was probably performed. So you can see responsories for all of those feasts. The last table in the handout lists these manuscript additions to Bartha Print 6 in liturgical order according to the occasions for which they were designated to be used. Varying degrees of solemnity are indicated by the number and kind of compositions assigned to a given feast. The items listed at the end of the table, however, for common use and hence appropriate for various occasions, could enhance the solemnity of any celebration, for example, by using the Mass Ordinary, common office items, the Magnificat motet, or Te Deum. This single collection of printed responsories and manuscript compositions to provide polyphonic music for the solemn and festive celebration of the Mass in office throughout the entire liturgical year. No wonder this means. Thus far, we have seen general ties between Bartlett and Wittenberg by reason of the Reform movement, the print manuscript music, and the church calendar. Peter Steckel and his brother Leonard, however, provide a more direct connection between these two 16th century towns, for it is probably Peter's name that appears in an inscription in the Discampus Parchment. This is mentioned on page 2 of the handout in the description. Peter was the younger brother of Leonard Steckel, the rector of the Bartlett Latin School. Because he was also a Reform leader in Slovakia, we shall study him first. He was born in 1510 in Bartlett. He began his formal education there under the direction of Valentin Peck and continued with the English humanist Leonard Cox in neighboring Kosice. Both teachers had come to Upper Hungary from the University of Krakow. Leonard then went to Breslau to study Greek, and there he became a follower of the Reformation. His goal, to work under the Reform leaders themselves, was realized when he matriculated at the University of Wittenberg in the fall of 1530. His intellectual abilities and his personal qualities earned him the respect of Reform leaders and a lifelong friendship of Philip and Langton. Many of the letters between Leonard and Philip have been preserved. In the spring of 1539, after several exchanges of letters between Luther and Langton and the Bartlett City magistrates, Steckel received a call to return to his birthplace as rector of the Latin School. Within a year, Steckel had written the rules for the organization and governance of the school, rules which became a model for other Reformed schools in Slovakia. His prestige grew, and he became known as the Preceptor of Hungary, just as his friend and mentor, Melanchthon, was known as the Preceptor of Germany. On Easter Sunday, 1560, as Steckel was directing the choir in the processional hymn, Salva Festa Dies, perhaps I am reading from my own, he became violently ill and never recovered. He died a few weeks after his friend, Melanchthon, had died in June 1560. Peter Steckel, Leonard's brother, also matriculated at Wittenberg and was regarded by Luther and Melanchthon as a capable and responsible man. The two brothers maintained a close friendship, and after his return to Bartlett, Peter also taught in Latin school. The Steckels' association with and regard for Luther and Melanchthon and the respect these Wittenberg professors had for him suggest that the four men shared many similar ideas and attitudes, and that these must have been reflected not only in the moderate Reform majors in Bartlett and the excellent school rules written by Leonard Steckel, but also in the liturgy and the music for St. Eugenius Church as preserved in Bartlett Print 6. In other words, Bartlett Print 6 can be seen as a musical document about 16th century Bartlett and that town's connections with Wittenberg during the first half of the 16th century. But for me, beyond that, these battered books attest to the influence that individuals have on other individuals and how that influence, that preaching and teaching, that shared vision, coupled with friendship and continued support, can touch the lives of every person in a school, the Bartlett Latin School, a church, St. Eugenius Church, a town, Bartlett, and an entire region, Eastern Slovakia. And that keeps me teaching. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertha. There may be time for questions at the end of the session. The next presentation will be given by Laura Ewens. Laura holds a doctorate in musicology from Indiana University and has taught at the universities of Missouri, Georgia, and Maryland. She has published editions of Reformation music in London, West Germany, and the United States, and is currently working on a catalog of music books printed in Nuremberg between 1542 and 1564. Laura will discuss music and liturgy at Leipzig St. Thomas Church in the mid-16th century.
beautiful modern edition of Renaissance music affords scholars and performers a wealth of information. The notes are transcribed into modern notation, the text translated, the sources of the music identified, and all variants listed. In order to gather all of that knowledge together between editor of a 16th century music manuscript is frequently forced to turn detective, deducing probabilities from the few clues available to him. Characteristically, that manuscript was copied by several scribes, none of whom signed his name. One quickly learns to watch out for scribal errors. If the editor does not correct the inevitable copying mistakes, the resulting transcriptions can rival any contemporary composition for dissonance. Some of the pieces are attributed, that is, the composer's name is written at the beginning of the piece, but not all, and some of those attributions will either be questionable or erroneous. If the scribes worked from an index, rarely is it included in the manuscript. Often, compositions will be missing one or more voice parts. Sometimes, not all of the text is copied below the music, and in all instances, text and music are not precisely aligned. Frequently, neither the date nor the place of copying is recorded anywhere in the source. All of this fairly accurately describes the manuscript Leipzig, Karl Marx University Library, manuscript of Thomas Tirsche 4950, henceforth Leipzig 4950. It was first mentioned in 1913 as Vielleicht die wertvollste handschriftliche Sammlung lateinischer Kirchenmusik von evangelisch-deutschen Böhmen, and has long been recognized as one of the major sources of Reformation polyphony. More than 14 scribes, some with almost illegible handwriting, worked on it. Of the 243 compositions, some of them lengthy masses, only 84, about one-third of the total, are attributed to 29 different composers. 15 pieces are lacking 1 to 3 parts. By the early 20th century, this manuscript was part of the holdings of Leipzig's Thomas Tirsche Library, but there exists no definitive documentation of its whereabouts before 1909. Surviving catalogs of the Thomas Tirsche Library from the 16th and 17th centuries are not helpful in this regard. Most of the entries for manuscripts are maddeningly vague. A typical one can be translated 6 parts put together without parchment in which are many pieces. One ray of sunshine, the 5 extant part books of Leipzig 4950 are all still in their original pigskin bindings, which have the date 1558 blind pressed into the front covers. An examination of the repertory of Leipzig 4950 reveals that most of the texts are Latin and sacred, including 17 masses and 18 magnificats. Inexplicably, the only non-religious composition is a lengthy Italian battle madrigal, and absolutely no one can deduce any sort of religious use for that piece. Only 18 works are set to German texts, since these include such Lutheran standards as Erhaltens Herr and Erschienen ist der Heilige Tag. The assumption was made in the earliest musicological literature dealing with the source that it was copied for a Lutheran church, albeit one in which the liturgy remained largely Latin. My principal problem was to determine as precisely as possible for which church the music was copied. I decided to begin with the supposition that it had indeed been written for a church in Leipzig, presumably the Thomas Kirche, and had not been removed from the city until World War II, when it was taken to an unknown location for safekeeping and not returned until 1959. After examining the mid-16th century Lutheran literature for Leipzig, studying the political and religious history of the area, and tracing many of the minor composers represented there into Leipzig, I concluded that my hypothesis was probably correct. He had studied briefly the priesthood in his youth, had been unfavorably impressed by the Leipzig debate of 1519, and subsequently fought the incursion of the Reformation in his lands 20 years. He even tried, mostly unsuccessfully, to draw the Pacific Erasmus into open conflict with me. After the death of his last son, he attempted to block the imminent succession of his pastor brother, Heinrich, but he died before those negotiations could be carried out. Heinrich immediately proclaimed the Reformation in his new duchy, but was met with a hailstorm of protest from the University Theological Faculty of the town council. As a result of resistance from those groups, the worship service outlined in the Kirchen Ordinance of 1539 specified a striking number of Greek and Latin items: the Introit, Kyrie, Gloria, Sequence, and the feast days, the Psalms. The emphasis on musical tradition is apparent in repetitions of the phrase Dies Judaeus Exaltus Jesus, much emphasis on tradition. This church order was substantially revised in 1540. The credo was added in Latin, and new instructions permitted the singing of both the Latin and German Agnus Dei on feast days. It's important to point out here that with these revisions, the entire Latin ordinary of Kyrie, Gloria, Credo, Sanctus, and Agnus could be performed polyphonically on feast days, leaving the music directors the freedom to borrow Mass ordinary settings by Catholic composers. Most of the offices or prayer hours were abolished, but the musically significant office of Vespers was retained, and those paragraphs in the church order concerning Vespers call for psalms, antiphons, hymns, and the Magnificat canticle, all in Latin. Therefore, the presence of 18 Latin Magnificats and other Vespers compositions amongst the 49 is surprising. Of the items of the proper of the Mass, the Kirchen Ordinance specifies only the introit, the introductory Mass chant, and the sequence, the lengthy rhymed chant that followed the Alleluia, except during penitential seasons. Luther kept the introit in his Formula Missae, but gave only tentative approval to the sequence because many are excessively long. Leipzig 4950 contains 12 sequences and 25 introits. For the most part, those proper items omitted in the church order, such as graduals and offertories, are not represented with polyphonic settings in the manuscript. Thus far, the evidence collected was encouraging but not conclusive. There are settings of the communion chant in two of those 17 Mass cycles. This chant had been emphatically repudiated by Luther and is not mentioned in the Ducal Saxon Church Order. Also, many such church orders from the 1530s and 40s exhibit a strongly conservative nature, and the singing of Latin ordinary cycles was evidently a common practice in Lutheran churches. But I uncovered additional supporting evidence in a section added to the order in 1540 and headed Von den Sonnen festen oder Feiertagen, so man im Jahr halten soll, the liturgical calendar for the year. Lutheran church calendars often retain feasts for those saints mentioned in the Bible, such as John the Baptist, Mary Magdalene, and the Apostles. In addition to the usual Feast of Christ, the 1540 calendar called for the celebration of a significant number of Marian feasts, as well as the feasts of John the Baptist, Mary Magdalene, Michael the Archangel, the Apostles, the conversion of Paul, and the martyrdom of Saint Stephen. These last two are rarities. In the Heiligentage besonders die Marien Apostel und Engeltage in the Reformationszeit, Robert Lanzmann wrote that the Ducal Saxon Order, the Polnische Agenda of 1569, and the Neder Österreich Order of 1571 were among the very few to specify the Feast of the Conversion of Paul, which occurs on January 25th. The case of a Leipzig origin for Leipzig 4950 was strengthened by the discovery that there is music in this source for all of the feasts named in the Ducal Saxon calendar, except the martyrdom of St. Stephen. Lanzmann pointed out, however, that this feast, celebrated on December 26th, was regarded more as a part of Christmas rather than as a saint's feast in its own right. Possibly some of the Christmas selections of Life Support United for People Who Have Sung on St. Stephen's Day. As is typical of most manuscripts of Lutheran polyphony, much of the music was intended for the major pieces of Christmas, Easter, Pentecost, Trinity Sunday, predominantly. The less prominent calendar events were represented usually by only 1 to 3 works. For example, for the feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 29th, an anonymous introit, Benedicite Domino Omnes Angelus, is copied in Isaac 49. For the feast of the conversion of St. Paul, there is an introit by Thomas Schulzer about whom he was counseling. The last pieces of evidence came from investigating the lives of composers who were represented in Leipzig 4950. This manuscript contains many pieces by Franco-Flemish, Italian, and German composers who were famous and whose works were widely distributed throughout Europe. Jacques Arcadel, Heinrich Isaac, Josquin des Prez, Clemens Nonpapa, Ludwig Zenfeld, and Pierre Leroux, just to mention a few, are well represented in prints and manuscripts Copenhagen to Naples, Copenhagen. But what about those minor composers with whose names even Renaissance music specialists are generally unfamiliar? Martin Agricola, Wilhelm Breitengrasse, Matthias Eppel, Wolfgang Töpfer or Fidius, Isaac Hassler, Georg Mürtelein, and Thomas Kroger. The pieces attributed to these men in marks of 4950 are mostly unique. That is not present in any other surviving source. As it turned out, a number of these men had studied in Leipzig before accepting posts in other cities. Thomas Kroppel, who is represented in Leipzig 4950 with a unique Easter mass, studied at the University of Leipzig in 1517 and 1518. He later became a schoolmaster of Schmidt. Wilhelm Breitengrasse attended the university in 1514, but apparently went back to his native Nuremberg without his degree, since he had never addressed his magister in the records of the Eugenian student where he taught. Georg Mürtelein is represented in Leipzig 4950 by a unique parody mass on the motet Jerusalem Rouge by Jean Michel. Mürtelein was the organist of the Berenskirche in Nuremberg from 1545 to 1565, and he's also a skilled cartographer. Like Kroppel and Breitengrasse, he went to the University of Leipzig, and in the notice of his appointment as organist, he is called Jürg Mürtelein des Bandschreibers Sohn von Leipzig. No other pieces by this man are extant. He may have given up composing after writing this one amateurish, technically flawed piece. Matthias Eppel, birth and death dates unknown, matriculated at Leipzig in 1482. He was employed as a rent schreiber at Georg's court and was paid by the Leipzig Town Council in 1516 for a motet on a text from Ecclesiastes. If one accepts the assumption that the Leipzig manuscript was copied there shortly before being bound in 1558, then it was presumably organized under the direction of Melchior Hager, Thomas Kantor, music director at the Thomas Kirche, between 1553 and 1564. Hager studied at the University of Wittenberg and brought more than 50 music books with him to Leipzig, where they remained, as noted in a surviving image. When he left to take a position as a preacher, he sold 96 manuscripts and prints to the Leipzig Town Council for 50 gulden. The so-called Wittenberg connection has been traced in detail by a scholar named Wolfram Steuer, and I will say here only that it accounts for the presence in Leipzig 4950 of compositions by Simon Solarius, Thomas Schulzer, Isaac Hassler, and several others. Music was truly an important part of religious life in Lutheran Leipzig. Drawing upon the creative genius of three generations of composers from all over Europe, The copies of Bartlett's 4950 left us a splendid legacy of Lutheran music for the church, whose officials 200 years later would hire Johann Sebastian Bach as chancellor. And is there a better way to conclude the paper than with music? On April 19th, the University of Maryland Collegium of Musica performed a special concert of 16th century Lutheran music. One of the selections on that program comprised the Kyrie and Gloria of the Missa Veni Sanctor Spiritus, newly edited from Leipzig 4950. We do not know for sure who the composer of this mass was. In both Leipzig 4950 and its earliest source, it's anonymous. In its latest source, this five-part mass is attributed to the greatest composer of the entire Renaissance era, Josquin III. Josquin died in 1521, and the unique attribution comes from the year 1566, on an encouraging spread of dates. Whoever the composer was, his piece is a beautiful one. I hope you will agree with that evaluation after listening to this recording by the University of Maryland Collegium Musicum, directed by Richard Wetzel and Paul Clayton. This will be the Kyrie and the Gloria. Thank you.
that as this instrument has been brought into this performance, is that the voices are based upon the Gregorian chant and song, and the voice that transmits the unadorned antiphon is being emphasized with the canon.
It frequently happens that courses outside purely artistic Having put a bearing on musical creativity, and I think we've seen several examples of that today. This paper is about two such choices and how they influenced a Catholic composer in the 16th century to create a specifically Protestant style of music. The composer is a German, Thomas Stolzer, who was born between 1480 and 1485 and died in 1526. Little is known about his life, but the information we do have is important and revealing. As a priest at the cathedral chapter in Breslau between 1519 and 1532, Stolzer composed a polyphonic setting of the wedding song, Beate Agnes, for the marriage of the Hungarian king, Louis II, and the Habsburg Mary, the daughter of Philip III and Joanna of Castile. Later that same year, the new queen, from this time forward, was called Mary of Hungary, possibly recalled the contribution to her wedding ceremony because she instigated Stolzer's appointment as Kapellmeister at the new court in Austria. Stolzer served the Hungarian court in that position until the year of the disastrous Battle of Mohacs. He did not, however, witness the gabagool as it's addressed in the latest issue of the 16th century journal, because he fell into the waters of the Tyne River a few months before and was drowned. Only weeks before his death, Stolzer had addressed a letter to his Albrecht of Prussia in which he referred to a new musical creation to Protestant texts. Now, in music history, the motet is a particularly Catholic type of composition. It was created by composers in northern France in the 13th century as a polyphonic or multi-voice elaboration of solo chants of the proper and the altar. By the end of the Middle Ages, when this term had come to be almost any qualified composition on a Latin text, and this was no longer strictly bound to the liturgy, motet texts still were frequently found in proper office sources. And hence, as Wolfgang Van Clay, that great transition figure between medieval and modern musical times, the motet became the religious vehicle for best displaying the compositional techniques and subjective interpretations of the new age. Wolfgang's techniques included the use of Gregorian melodies woven into the polyphonic fabric, and sometimes treated in canon, which is simply the 16th century canonical rap. Wolfgang also made memorable music imitations. He also liked to reduce the number of parts which we call voices in music from five or six to duets and trios, and then recombine them again in the course of the same work. He also liked to shift from bugle to quadrumeter and five again in a short space of time. Wolfgang was one of the first composers to use a Latin song in his text, and he gave special attention to the correct accentuation of the words in his musical setting. Even more, he applied his compositional techniques in such a way as to enhance the meanings of the words. The possibilities for expressing personal feelings about religious texts subsequently attracted many of the best composers of the 16th century to motet compositions. Following the example of this older man, Thomas Stolzer used the same compositional techniques, but he applied them for the first time to songs in German. The resulting German song motets, of which there are four, Psalms 12, 13, and 37, and 86, are transmitted only from the sources. Each demonstrates how well Stolzer had mastered the arsenal of compositional procedures from the greatest musical figure of his time. Each also exhibits the spirit sensitive to the meanings and interpretive possibilities of the text. To give just one example, I'm going to play the first part of Psalm 86, Morning of the Lord. This motet is composed for six voices, yet only two voices begin. If you listen carefully, you'll hear that the soprano comes in an imitation of the alto. You have a chance to hear the so-called pair intention again, because after the opening duet, there is a second duet on a lower pair of voices. Gradually, all the voices are drawn in for all of their singing simultaneously, but before this section of the motet just this first section of the motet, and the whole motet is divided into three parts. And the reason we only have part of the song on the handout is because this is the part that corresponds to section one. I can't do things backwards.
Run the gamut from confusing counterpoint to the phrase, the vain talk of the unlucky, with a sevenfold repetition of a musical idea, as a phrase, and with a purified seven times. In the song that you just heard, there is a lovely, gentle descent of the opening phrase that is, to my mind, a moving depiction of the request, Lord, incline thy ear. The same passage shows that the composer also attends to the correct accentuation of the words as the musical rhythm illustrates. For the satisfactory melding of musical and textual needs and magnificent writing of five and six and even seven voices at once, it is hard to believe that the composer himself is not inspired by the subject. Nevertheless, two factors, aside from Schultz's own personal themes, entered into the creation of the German song of Tet. One of these factors was a pagan, Louis of Hungary's Queen Mary, who commissioned these works. As a child, Mary had been raised by her aunt, Margaret of Austria, in the artistically sophisticated atmosphere of the Netherlands court at Nijmegen. She was taught keyboard from the age of 3 or 4, and this training was later continued at the court of her grandfather Maximilian in Innsbruck. At the Hungarian court, when Mary came as a teenage bride, her husband Louis played the lute, and music continued to be a core part of her life, although she was harshly criticized by many subjects precisely for her enjoyment of activities that included music, such as hunting and dancing and fantasy. In later years, as the regent of the Netherlands, Mary had become an influential music patron, one who demonstrated intelligence and musicalness of the court, and actively recruited performers and composers to travel with her brothers, Charles V and Ferdinand I. Yet, even at her young age, Mary seems to have recognized Schultz's remarkable talent. It was she who called Schultz to be appointed to televise the court, and it was Mary again who requested that he provide Ted in the group of the song, as we know from Schultz's older letter on the internet already. So Thomas Schultz were owed both his position and more specifically his commission for these particular works to this musically educated young woman. Was he also expressing his hatred of his religious convictions instead of his songs? That Mary commissioned musical settings of musical texts, and that Schultz agreed to get a musical setting, have occasioned much speculation about the religious beliefs of both patrons and composers, and clearly presents us with a second factor in this musical creation, the Reformation. With regard to the composer, a letter from a councilman of Breslau to the Silesian reformer John Tetz indicates that Schultz had actually confessed himself to the reformer. Moreover, Schultz's own letter, to which I keep referring, is addressed to Duke Albert of Prussia, who had been converted to Lutheranism. This letter seems to indicate that the composer wished to enter the Duke's service. However, Schultz was a changeable, easily influenced personality that the other letters can't indicate. There was also the necessity of keeping his financial aid for the Catholic Church. All these factors probably combined to keep his conversion to Lutheranism from being terrible to come. Despite Schultz's bawling, the conventional conflict brought on by the Reformation, with its emphasis on personal understanding and widespread congregational interpretation of music, must be considered an essential factor in the sensitive interpretation of this German text. There were also the reasons for his patience and his pity. Mary's hungry reasons for requesting that these particular songs be given musical settings are not known. As the object of much unjust criticism, the hatred in the new country, she may well have found a certain comfort from texts that promise rewards for the righteous and modest and unjust. It's certain her personal convictions about Luther are Luther. In his thesis, The Lutheran Reformation in Slovakia, David Daniels has investigated this question of Mary's Lutheran sympathies in some fail, drawing the line on his very fine work. At the Hungarian court, there was a strong contingent of reformers, led principally by George of Brandenburg, Mary's personal advisor, and Louis's cousin and tutor. As a well-educated, intelligent young woman, Mary did not approve of abuses going on within the church, and to a degree, she condemned reformers. She tolerated reformers at the court, both in Hungary and later in the Netherlands. She attempted to mediate between her brother, Ferdinand, and Protestant. In 1526, to even threaten to turn Hungary into a Lutheran kingdom was fined for 407 opposition to Emperor Charles of France. That same year, Luther himself dedicated four of his songs to Mary and wrote the theme he was dedicating these songs to her in order to exhort her to continue cheerfully and confidently to further God's holy work in Hungary. "For I received the good news," he said, he wrote, "that your majesty is inclined to favor the gospel." The result of Luther's explicit letter was short admonition from Mary's brother Ferdinand, rebuking Mary for having accepted Luther's expositions of the Psalms and allowing him to be dedicated to her. Mary's replies avoid giving away her personal feelings. They reveal those qualities of diplomacy and devotion to the Habsburgs that made her such a capable ruler rather than and I suspect if you read between the lines, it also shows an informative view to Mary at one time before it was changed. She responded that she could not stop Luther from dedicating her songs to whomever he chose, and that she herself would never do anything to threaten the interests of the band. She later vowed she would no longer read Luther's books, as she would be so considerably warned about their errors on the ground. Nevertheless, Mary continued to show interest in Luther and his teaching. Very relevant and changes in the rules of the home and Mary's chapter and people. On the other hand, Lutheranism at the Hungarian court was identified with German pro-Habsburg agendas, and as such was much political issues as a religious one. In later years, as regent in the Netherlands, Mary demonstrated her total commitment to Habsburg interests, even carrying out the Inquisition of the Netherlands for trouble. And at no time did she actively promote his cause or openly prescribed to his people. Weighing all the evidence, Daniel has concluded that Mary of Hungary was neither Lutheran nor the patroness of Lutheranism in Hungary. Rather, she appears to have held humanistic attitudes similar to those taught by Erasmus. Perhaps significantly, Erasmus later dedicated to Mary his book on Christian widowhood. Rather than clouding the issue of the Netherlands to Luther, Schulte's German songs composed for Mary perhaps give the clearest evidence the Queen's need for a meaningful religious experience that transcended particular doctrine. Infusing Lutheran sentiment into Catholic structures, the composer responded musically in numerous suggestive ways to the personal meanings of Luther's texts, the entreaties for heavenly attention, the outcry against the medieval dualism of language within Luther's heart, the assurance of reward for the upright. Yet the motet form itself and the techniques employed were born of Catholicism. Moreover, in two of the settings of his songs, Schulte employed a Catholic chant. This borrowing is clearly illustrated in Psalm 37, which we have in your handout, where the opening musical idea is taken from an antiphon and a verse from an entry. I've borrowed part of the chant just to show you how the borrowing by Schulte took place. And the chant appears with the first line music at the bottom of the handout. Gloria, 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 gloria. And if you see from the voice below, which is the alto part of the Schulte song in its beginning,
thank you. these are all women's sessions on music of the Reformation.